Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. Can you believe we're almost to our 200th episode of this show? It's so exciting. It'll be the 200th episode on February 3rd, but today's episode, January 27th episode, is going to be a lot of fun as well. I'm your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest. But before I do that, I'm going to ask you to do what I asked you to do every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday through Friday, every day of the week, I ask you to do the same thing. And that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Find someone who maybe they're just starting out as an entrepreneur. Maybe they're starting their business. Maybe they're at work and they're considering the entrepreneurial journey. Or maybe they want to learn about health, wealth, love. It's so much information that we share here on the Roundtable Talk Show, but your friends, your family, your network won't know what we're up to unless you share it. So as I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and introducing the show to your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Mr. Ray Ellen. Ray Ellen is EP at Comedy Central, founder of Comedy Cloud, owner Aruba Ray's Comedy Club, host of upcoming show House Arrest, executive producer of Comedy Central show This Week at the Comedy Cellar, recently wrapped season three, host creator of Late Night with Ray Ellen, the first web-based talk show to simultaneously combine both in studio and online audiences. Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's very nice to meet you.
I just have to ask this question. It's a pleasure to meet you as well, but I've been learning from all the guys. Is that a COVID beard?
This is a COVID beard, yes. I never had a beard in my life, and my head is dark, and this thing came in like Ernest Hemingway. I don't know what's going on, but I've never had a beard until about 7 months ago. And I think it's probably time to get rid of it, but we'll ride
it. I think it's cool. I like it. But it's like all of a sudden, every man I talk to is like this long beard. I'm like, this must be the Jesus kind of time in our lives, because it's like, but I think it's wonderful. Your bio is very impressive.
So oh, thank you. Wow.
Comedy. What got you into comedy, Ray?
I became interested in comedy when I was about 9 years old. I saw an episode of Saturday Night Live and I was like, wow, this is interesting. And I'd watch, you know, late night talk shows. I'd hear my folks listening to them. And there's just something about it that sort of resonated with me. And my mom is very funny and she was always, you know, being very entertaining at home. And I would make other kids laugh in the classroom. So when I saw that people, you could actually do that on TV for a living, I'm like, oh, maybe that should be something to look into. And then when I told that to my father when I was about 11, he really discouraged it. And for about 3 days when I was 11 years old, my plan was to become an orthodontist. And and then that, 72 hours later, I'm like, I have no interest in doing that whatsoever. So I just sort of was always into comedy and I performed throughout high school and throughout college. I would do open mic shows in comedy clubs in the Boston area. And that's sort of how I just sort of got into that world of performing when I was a teenager. So.
Sounds interesting. Tell us about the in-studio and online audiences.
Oh, so that show, I used to host a talk show called Late Net. And at the time, the technology was newer. This is about 11 years ago. And so I would do a show and we had a live in-studio audience and we had people watching at home at the time. We did it for a while on AOL. I did it on another platform called Pal Talk. And the guests were, you know, I had guests like Fran Drescher and Leonard Nimoy and, Paul Schaefer from The Letterman Show and Hank Azaria. So it was really fun and similar to what you're doing. You have people watching at home and and it's interactive. And it was really, really really fun. I really enjoyed doing it. And it was just neat to have that monitor on my desk with people watching, you know, from all over the globe, people in Belgium and Portugal and Wisconsin, and they could interact with the guests. So that was pretty fun. You know, I enjoyed doing that. And then this is before Facebook. So with Facebook, it's just amazing what everybody can do. You know, it's so cool.
I know. So what are you doing now with comedy?
So I own a comedy club in Aruba. I'm on Aruba right now. We reopened December 1st, which was a huge relief because we just for the last several months, just like everybody, you know, so many things have been closed down. So there's been no comedy clubs really open in New York. There's some outdoor shows and some rooftop shows, but nothing where you could really, you know, be in front of other people. So we reopened December 1st in Aruba. It's primarily American tourists that are here. I've had the club, Aruba Rays Comedy Club, since April of 2013. And we do about 100 shows a year. And I opened it up because I love Aruba. It's to me, it's the most beautiful place to be. And we, you know, we distance the tables. They're very, very well spread apart. And of course, everybody has been tested to come into Aruba. So it's a really comfortable setting. And it's been great. And comedians, I bring in comedians from New York and LA and Boston, and everybody you've seen on, you know, on the Tonight Show and Comedy Central and HBO. So the shows are outstanding. They're really great. And it's been such a joy to get to perform live in front of, you know, actual human beings, which is, you know, it's exciting. The other thing I've been doing that we started in May, I started something called Comedy Cloud. The website's comedycloud.co. And basically we're doing Zoom comedy shows, primarily for companies that want to reward workers that have been, you know, that have all been working remotely and just sort of reconnect everybody that, you know, that have been stuck at home for the last, you know, 8-9 months. And it's been great. I mean, performing on Zoom is, as I'm sure everybody knows, and being on Zoom is completely different than doing it live. I mean, you're really right there to your camera and people don't really see your body language. So it's a different vibe, but it's actually been really satisfying. And it's been great to see, you know, to get to see people come together who've really been disconnected for a long time. So it boosts employee morale. It really, and I actually think it improves productivity. Just doing these 60 to 70 minute comedy shows, and it's usually myself and three or four other people. And you know, we had the winner of Last Comic Standing, Alonzo Bowden, the runner up on America's Got Talent, Tom Cotter, you know, all just outstanding comedians. And so we've done over 100 of those shows on Comedy Cloud. And so it's primarily different organizations, whether financial services companies or law firms or ad agencies or tech companies, any kind of a company is
welcome.
It's fun.
I like it. So two things. I'm a huge comedy fan. I grew up watching Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence. And for the last, I would say 4 years, I will always produce stand-up comedy shows. And I haven't produced a show in over, I would say, almost 2 years. And I have a new stand-up comedy show that we're filming on February 8th here in Long Beach. So if you ever need a comedian from Long Beach or a host from Long Beach to come to Aruba, you can fly in Sharifa Hardy and I'll give you an amazing show. But I was not interested in any of the Zoom shows. Like, I love the energy of the audience. I love the energy of people just being there. But Ray, we're going to talk a little bit more about it. I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, Miss Sally Hoes Campbell. Sally is known online and in the community as a playful and holistically inclined helper in her roles as a mom, psychologist, public speaker, motivator, yoga teacher, meditation guide, mindful food and drink experience curator, and competitive runner. She has a special interest in nutritional psychology, health psychology, family therapy, mindfulness, and play therapy. Her mindfulness knowledge and certifications are extensive, including mindful eating, mindfulness for performance in business and athletics, mindfulness for kids and teens, mindfulness for stress reduction, and yoga teacher training. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Well, that was a mouthful.
That's what I said. I'm tired just reading it.
Thank you, Dad. No, I think I want to emphasize there, you know, playful helpers. So I actually started in TV and wound up coming into psychology. It's actually surprising how many journalists and TV broadcasters and people come from cinema over to psychology. But I was just really interested in people and observing human behavior. And I got into psychology and I brought kind of the playfulness of the stage and production and tried to bring it into therapy that I do with all ages. And it's a funny kind of segue from Ray. One of my prescriptions that I have with clients in COVID is laughter therapy. So I actually prescribe stand-up comedy. So I have some clients where fancy psychology term is behavior activation, where, you know, we choose 5 to 10 minutes and in a day just to laugh. And there's actually a whole line of therapy called laughter therapy. And I've seen the difference in my own life. So my husband and I have 3 young kids. We were homeschooling and we're both working from home. And we both at the end of the day just need some laughter. So we just started, you know, about a month into COVID watching Jimmy Fallon do his show from at home. And we just noticed it really shifted our mood. So I tried to bring that into some of my clients' homes. So I work with adults who live on their own or with friends or partners, as well as with families. So talking about, you know, have a family show that you watch together and have it be something that's funny. You know, don't focus necessarily on the lessons every day and the teachable moments. We're in a crisis and we still need to play. We still need to laugh. So, I guess a little bit about me. I wanted to make sure people think that I'm not boring and just to be. And then I do have a book. So I published a book because, again, I went into parenting with this idea that I'm not going to lose myself. And though I was really excited to be a parent, all the parenting textbooks just, they gathered dust on my bedside table. You know, I knew a bit obviously about child development, but I wanted to create a playful parenting book that you could literally pick up a page, go to any page of my book, and it could be anything from, you know, doing some crafts, self-massage, massage of the kids, food activities that bring in mindfulness and playfulness. So really trying to bring that playful energy and in COVID more than ever into people's homes.
I definitely understand. No, you sound like a lot of fun. You know, nobody thinks you're boring just because you had all those big words in your bio. We still think you're fun. But I agree with you, because even my stand-up comedy shows that I produce are called Laughter Heals. And that is truly my belief, that when you laugh, it's just so healing and refreshing, and you just let go of all your worries and all your problems. So I just think it's beautiful, Sally. Now I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. This must be the TV lineup today, because we have Marina Reed. She is the author of Primrose Street. Marina Reed has worked as a researcher and writer for CBC Television and has lived and worked in countries around the world as an author, educator, journalist, and artist. Her experiences are brought to life through her fiction and nonfiction writing. She is a great lover of nature, of animals, and the empowerment of individuals. Good morning, Marina. How are you?
Good morning. So nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. Are you into comedy? Are you fun? That's what I want to know.
I am very fun, and it's nice to have this comedic kind of beginning to the day, because it's true, we do need to embrace that for sure. I think I bring a little bit of the flip side with what I've been doing for the last year, though. Primrose Street was my first novel, and if you ask what my writing is about, it is about empowerment of individuals, celebrating diversity, trying to bring out the fact that poison of misunderstanding really, really takes away from the fact that we can live authentic lives, being who we are without feeling fear of being who we are. So my books address that. Primrose Street, my first one, It's Lonely in Paradise. And then with the loss of my husband died very suddenly 6 years ago, which pushed me into a very different world. And from that, from those very dark places, I ended up working with somebody, and we have put together 6 books that have created a new way of dealing with grief, a new paradigm for grief that deals with colors rather than stages. And they were very difficult to write, but also very, very healing. It's called the Remember It's Okay series. And they do bring actually a lot of hope, a lot of joy. I remember, you know, you were mentioning, Sally, about going and picking up books when you were looking to be a parent. I remember going and picking up books when I lost my husband, and just none of them appealed to me. And I remember thinking, yeah, there has to be something here that's going to be the voice of the person that's grieving, and some way that we can help people know how to help each other. So we do need the comedy to help us through that. And we also need the ability to learn how to grieve together in a really positive, uplifting way.
Yes, absolutely. So for someone who helps other people with grief, what do you do for self-care? How do you keep from having it all overwhelm you?
For me personally, I've really come to learn an awful lot through these books. I've worked with a psychotherapist, Marianne Boyd. I'm the writer, she's the psychotherapist, and our teamwork has been just phenomenal. I think that I've learned to become much more mindful. I mean, I taught yoga for years, but it's interesting how it all shifts when you move in. It's like kind of meeting death brings you to a different doorway. And you can cross that doorway and become all sorts of different things. And it can be a very dark journey, or it can be a very bright journey eventually. And I think that the caring for me is having learned to be able to say no and be able to take time for myself when I need it and find that validation inside rather than outside.
Absolutely. Marina, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Radiance Harris. Radiance Esquire is an award-winning trademark attorney, best-selling author, and speaker. As the founder and managing attorney of Radiance IP Law, she helps small and emerging businesses protect, monetize, and leverage profitable brands with trademarks. She has successfully represented startups and multinational corporations across diverse industries. Previously, she worked at one of the world's largest law firms representing Fortune 200 brands. Good morning, Radiance. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm doing fabulous. How are you?
I'm excited to be here. And I'm just going to say this. You don't look like a lawyer. Lawyers always seem so mean and so tough. You just glowing right. And smiling.
And boring and dry. And yes, I get that a lot. But believe it or not, I am. And I have been a lawyer for over a decade and started my career at a big law firm. So I was at one of those really stuffy law firms where you have to wear suits all day. And started my career helping the big brands protect their trademarks. And so while I was there, I noticed 2 things. One was that I was constantly sending cease and desist letters and initiating lawsuits against small business owners. It seemed that they didn't have the education or the knowledge about trademarks and why they're important, and why you need to protect your trademarks, but also be respectful of other people's trademarks. So I noticed that. And then secondly, I noticed that the billable hour, high billable hour that attorneys bill their clients out was just absolutely ridiculous and was basically on a time model versus a value model. So after doing that for a few years, I just became unfulfilled and just decided on a whim to launch my own law firm, Radiance IP Law. And so at Radiance IP Law, we're an exclusively flat fee trademark law firm, and we specialize in helping small and emerging businesses protect their brands. And here's the most important thing that I'm always shouting to the rooftops is that it's important to protect your brand, your trademarks before you make it big. A lot of people think like, I will protect it once I start making money or once I start making it to a certain point, where that is not a smart thing to do, because you could actually end up building a brand that you don't actually legally own and then end up having to rebrand it after you've built it. So that's never a good idea. So I'm always educating people about trademarks. It's very much my passion. I recently published a book called Trademark Like a Boss, The Ultimate Step-by-Step Guide to Protecting Your Brand. It was a bestseller on Amazon. I'm really proud of that because it shows that people are becoming more interested in trademarks and learning what it is and how it can serve them in their businesses. And so that is what my whole focus is to help people educate them and to have them help them protect themselves so they can actually end up leveraging and monetizing the IP that they've created.
Congratulations. So do you often feel that it's because people have this image, I think when of trademarks, that it's going to cost $50 billion to get it. I don't have that money. So I'll just kind of hope for the best. Do you think cost is one of the reasons that people don't?
I think people, yeah, I think there's just a misunderstanding about attorneys. Like a lot of people think they should only hire an attorney once they get in trouble. You know, that might be the case if you get like a DIY or a DUI, or if you're like going, you know, some kind of criminal, or maybe you're going through a divorce. Yeah, you would hire an attorney because you need help and you're in trouble. When you're a business owner, you have to be proactive. And like the first thing that you should have on your team is a lawyer, a business lawyer, a trademark lawyer. And so I think there's just kind of a misunderstanding about the legal profession and how it works. And then yeah, cost can definitely be a prohibitor where they're automatically thinking it's gonna cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. But then when once you actually start looking into it and inquiring about it, you realize, oh, this is quite reasonable, especially because once you do have the trademark, you're protected. Like you invest in it, you protect it. You have to renew it every 10 years. And so long as you're using that brand, you have the peace of mind to just focus on growing your brand. And I think that peace of mind and legal ownership that you would have is priceless, because you're going to end up paying a lot more money if you don't do it and wait and end up getting in legal trouble. So I think it's just like a mindset thing that makes people like a little discouraged about reaching out to an attorney.
Yes, but you definitely have to get the attorney on the team. That's what we talked about, what you said earlier. I'm going to come back to you, Radiance. I want to go over to Sally real quick. Sally, we heard from Marina. She talked about her experiences. She talked about grief. When Marina was speaking, what were your thoughts, Sally?
Just around grief, yeah. I mean, with books, that's so true. Parenting books, grief books. And I even find that with my clients where, you know, when they pick up a book, it just doesn't always speak to them. And we know, like I mentioned, you know, laughter prescription, having, you know, social prescription, having people to contact with and getting those supports from other people. Personal contact is such an important thing. So getting, you know, out of the book sometimes and just hearing from others who might be in that same position as well. And we know that's, you know, obviously social connection looks different now, but it's getting it where we can. So whether it's a phone call, you know, taking the pressure off of the Zoom and having to be cleaned up, or whether it's a Zoom contact or a social distance walk, if you're able to do that where you are. We have to sometimes be creative and kind of check with ourselves of, you know, how do we want to grieve and what will serve us right now.
Absolutely.
May I just explain something?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just want to explain something about the books that are quite unique, that we interviewed a number of people and did a lot of research. So it wasn't just, they're not just personal books. The first one is loss of a partner, then it's loss of a parent, teen loss, loss of a pet, loss of a sibling and a friend, and finally loss of a child. So they were very, very interesting interviews, and being a journalist, that really allowed me to do interviews in a very perceptive kind of in-depth way. But what's unique about these books is that I would take all of those interviews, we would look and find themes that came up in them, and then I would write first person, almost like journal entries. And when somebody reads them, it is like reading their own thoughts. So it's not being dictated to, which most books are. It's like you are reading those raw thoughts that most people who are grieving are actually too afraid to say out loud. Because one of the problems with grief, we have a very grief avoidant society, and people tire of grief very, very quickly. But the person in grief does not tire from it that quickly. And so they don't usually get a chance to say what they're really feeling to anybody. To read that in the book and then have a comment of how they can support themselves is really different. And we have a lot of breath in the book. We have blank pages beside each moment, as we call them. We give suggestions of how people can do things to remember who they've lost and support themselves. So it's a very empowering kind of series and quite different from anything out there. I think the other aspect to it is that to read this book as someone wanting to help someone else, you really get in the mind of the person who's grieving. And that is something that we often don't know, especially in the teen book. The teen book isn't losing a teen. The teen book is very unique. And I spoke to so many young people who felt that they had been bypassed when someone had died because they were either too young to be taken seriously, but they weren't old enough to be dealt with in a way that was an adult. So they were left. And that grief they felt was just nothing. Nothing happened with it. And when they read these books and read basically someone speaking to them, reading their own thoughts, the emails we got were just unbelievable.
I can definitely imagine. I want to go over to Ray. You know, Sally's talking about laughter therapy. She talks about her clients and how she incorporates it. Marina talked about how she helps people with grief through her books, many different ways. They're unique. We have Radiance, who usually helps people after they're in trouble. They maybe didn't get the trademark when they needed it, but in all these situations, there's some type of either grief or problem here. One of the things that I've learned is that when other people are in, the world is in grief right now. And when we have grief avoidance or when we have people who don't want to talk about it, I feel like you can always go to the comedians because they're the ones who have the nerve, let's say, to actually state their opinions and then kind of make people laugh. What are your thoughts, Ray?
Well, I think you're right. I do think that it's often it's comics that are willing to say, you know, whatever is on their mind, particularly during a crisis, because, I mean, these last several months, this past year, whatever, has been new for everybody. So everybody, you know, has this global crisis, and then everybody has their own, or many people have their own personal crisis, you know? And it's interesting. I used to always wonder about how comedy, you know, being used as a coping mechanism. And there are times where people will come up to me after a live show and just say, oh, you know, that was great. Thank you so much. I've been dealing with this and my father just passed away. And when people tell you those things, it's nice to hear that anything you're doing can help somebody get through something, you know? I lost my oldest sister back in March, a little less than a year ago during the pandemic.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's terrible. So, and she was 52 years old, married with a kid.
She's young.
Very young, very successful in Silicon Valley. And it was really, you know, no one knew what COVID was that early on. We'd heard of it, but it wasn't, you know. So a week after that happened, we basically went to lockdown in New York. So all of a sudden you're alone in your apartment and you're like, what do I do? All you have is just, you know, the thoughts in your head, you know? So for the first time, comedy was actually, I was consciously aware that doing comedy was helping me through my global crisis and also my own personal crisis, you know? So I think whatever works for anyone, whether it's, you know, reading or writing or taking in comedy or performing comedy, you know, whatever helps people get through, you know, life is not always easy. So you have to sort of navigate it any way you can. So it's tricky time.
It really is. Marina, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Radiance a question if I could. It's a very interesting subject, the trademark issue. I always think of it as, you know, you have to trademark a big invention. But what would the small, because I'm currently writing another book with somebody, and you're making me wonder if there should be a trademark happening there. And what would be one of the smaller things or something not an invention? Like, give me some idea of some of the range of trademarks that you work with.
Yeah. So the word, when you hear the word, intellect, you might've heard the term intellectual property.
Right.
So intellectual property is basically protecting a wide range of ideas. And so there's four categories, if you will, of protection under intellectual property. You have trademarks, which protect elements of your brand. So that's your business name, your logo, taglines, product or service names, event names, podcast names, radio show names, things like that. Anything that functions as a source identifier so that when people see that name or see right. that logo, you want them to automatically think of your products and services and not your competitors. And then there's copyright protection. Copyright protects any content that you create. So the books that you write, the videos that you have, the blog posts that you do, PowerPoint presentations that you make, those are all would be subject to copyright protection. Then you've got patents, which protect inventions. And then lastly, you have trade secrets, which protects anything that's proprietary in your business. So whether it's like client files, a business formula, recipe formulations, those are all trade secrets. And so generally speaking, all businesses, small, just new startups, small, medium, large, typically all of them have trademarks that they need to protect. All of them have copyrights and all of them have trade secrets. So I would say just about all businesses have those three things. The patents though, that's unique. You have to be a
right.
creating inventions and then
right.
secure protection for that. So generally speaking, as a small business owner, entrepreneur, you've got intellectual property right now.
Right, right. What's the biggest benefit of having a trademark or a, you know, copyright?
So the biggest benefit for a trademark is that it actually gives you legal ownership in the brand and the name that you're building for yourself. So a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs mistakenly believe that by getting business formation, so getting that LLC or they've got the domain name or they've got the social media handles, means that they're legally protected and they can use that name. That's incorrect. A trademark actually gives you legal ownership in the business name, logos, brands, book series names that you are building. And so that is the benefit, is that it gives you legal ownership and protection, and it gives you the right to exclude competitors from using the identical or similar name to yours. So right now, if you don't have any trademarks, there's nothing that legally prevents someone to be able to start, you know, their prim, they want to start a primrose, the name of your book. Now they want to start a podcast off of that name because there's no legal protections in place to prevent them from doing so.
Right. So interesting.
Let me just ask you this, because you mentioned domain names and one, and it may have changed because it was years ago. One of the most expensive lawsuits that I saw in regards to names was actually McDonald's, because they had to fight to get McDonald's.com. And their argument was that it was trademarked to them. But because it was a domain, McDonald's.com, not like McDonald's restaurant, or they actually had to pay the person who originally purchased McDonald's.com. Has that changed?
Well, the way it works is that, so just a domain name in itself is not considered trademark infringement. So let's say you're a trademark owner, you have, you know, ownership in a trademark. If someone else already has McDonald's.net or McDonald's.org, then you can't really claim, you can't get, meaning you can't secure ownership of those domain names if someone else already owns them. The only way it would become an issue is if on those sites they are selling and advertising McDonald's or causing consumer confusion where they're using the McDonald's brand or things of that nature. And so that's when it really becomes a problem. But just having a domain alone wouldn't be problematic. It's when there's some sort of unfair competition or unfair use or consumer misleading or confusion that would cause some issues from a trademark perspective.
Absolutely, because I always tell people when they ask, you know, what is something you would have done different? I'm like, when I start building my websites, I would have purchased a zillion one yeah. word domain. Like that was what I would have done. I would have purchased them all for a couple of dollars and sold them back to all these companies for millions of dollars.
There's domain squatters who do, like, they yes. see, like, they're out there and saying, okay, so-and-so, they're out there. There's trademark squatters and domain squatters. Well, they'll see, okay, let's go out and hurry up, and they just filed an LLC. Let's hurry up and get this domain and put it on sale for $9,000. Same with trademarks, where people will go and file for the trademarks because they realize someone's out there using a name. Oh, they haven't protected it. Well, it's fair game. Let's go and file for this based on an intent to use. So it is something that people do, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Ray, you were going to say something?
No. I find it very interesting. I had to go through everything that Radiance is describing. I had to go through that with all the Aruba Ray stuff and with the LateNet stuff. And yeah, it's really super information that you're sharing.
Yeah, very interesting.
Did you go through that process, Ray, at the beginning or after, you know, you may have ran into some situations?
I did do it at the beginning. I had an attorney at the time for a project I've been working on. When I told him what I was up to, he said, oh yeah, you know, you really should protect all that stuff now. So it was exactly what Radiant said. And I'm really glad I did, you know.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful advice. Sally, how you feeling over there?
I'm good. For trademarks, it's funny. I just got in the mail from the US, and I know it's a little bit different, but for my book, I got copyright, a license. You'd probably know more about this than me, Radiance. And I thought, oh, I've got copyright in the States. What if I don't have it here? Because I've only actually filed for something in Alberta, thinking, you know, my book's not going to sell outside of Alberta. I've made it more just for my community where I'm kind of known. And so it's kind of got my cogs going this week. And kind of wondering if there's, you know, something more I need to do in terms of my own book and some of my trademarks beyond Alberta, because it's a much bigger concept, and I'm not a legal brain. I'm a feelings heart. The way I think my husband.
I have a lot of feeler clients too. I get it. And I actually work with quite a few clients in Canada too, to get their protected in the United States. So it's something, especially in today's world. So like, we're all on the internet, right? And even more so now, because we're in a pandemic. So everyone's online, you're on social media, you have a website. So there's like this huge digital footprint that you're created. So literally anyone in any part of the world can violate your rights and steal your rights. So like, that's why for most cases, it's best to be proactive and kind of figure out what are some things that you should have in place to minimize the potential for any type of IP theft and misuse, because it's really rampant right now because we're all online.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I know I have all the IP addresses because my husband is all about buying domains that you think he can get money from. dollar, but for the last 5 years he's just bought up random domains for like a dollar in hopes that'll be our payday. But I know that I have all of the email or the web addresses that I need covered.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, but you never know. I always recommend get all your social media handles as well. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Radiance. I think that's very important. One thing people forget is social media handles. They come up with their business, they decide to go out there, maybe they're an author, they just released their book, and now when you go to social media, somebody has that handle and they don't know what to do. They built this brand around a name that now they don't have access to.
Yes, that happens too.
So I have a question for Ray.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, Ray, I know it's gorgeous to be living in Aruba, but why did you leave New York? To tell me your story of leaving New York, because I assume you live there and you live in Aruba permanently now?
No. I'm back and forth. I'm in Aruba usually 5.5 months a year.
Okay.
So I came to Aruba by accident February of 2012. So just about almost 9 years ago. Yeah. And came here by accident, fell in love with it. And I came every month for a year. I came for about 8-9 days a month for a year. I'd been working on a project in New York. I was totally burnt out, and coming to Aruba just really helped me recharge and relax. And it's a total 180 from, you know, from a big city.
Right.
And I loved it. So I wanted to figure out how to spend more time here. So at night, there isn't much to do. You know, there's just restaurants, there's some casinos, but there isn't a lot of nightlife. So I set up the comedy club in April of 2013, really just as a way so I could spend more time down here. And it turned into a pretty, thank goodness, a pretty successful venture. It's the Aruba Rays Comedy Club is the number one nighttime activity on TripAdvisor.
Yes. Aruba Ray? That's a great name. That. I like Aruba it. Ray.
Thank you.
I love that. I've been, as I told you, I've been going to Aruba since early 90s. So before it was even commercialized.
Right.
When there weren't even a lot of things. So like to see how it's evolved now and like seeing that there's clubs and stuff and lots of restaurants and nightlife, it's like, I agree with you. It's like a home away from home. It's like I've gone to all different places, all different other islands, but there's something about Aruba that's just really special.
It really is. Yeah. I've been to pretty much every island in the Caribbean, and there's just something about this place that is just, you feel terrific. Their motto is one happy island, and
yeah,
it's true.
It is true.
Yeah. And so now you have a little stake there, but you still work in New York then? You do both?
I do. So I go back and forth. So typically I'll do, you know, January, February, March in Aruba, and then go back to New York, and then do July and part of August in Aruba, and then November and part of December in Aruba as well. And it's good because I enjoy mixing up my life and having, you know, having that the city and the energy. But after about 6 to 8 weeks, I'm like, all right, yeah. I'm good. Let me go back to the other place.
Right. Yeah. But it's nice going back and forth. I remember living in a developing country, and I started missing a lot of things. Going back and forth is clearly the nice way to do it, for sure. That's great. And is your comedy club directed to tourists or locals or both? Because it would be a different kind of comedy, I would think.
Sure. Well, you know what's interesting is that, so locals, most locals speak four languages. They speak English, they speak Dutch, Spanish, and the local language is called Papiamento, which is a combination of Spanish and Dutch and Portuguese. But the shows are in English, and, you know, and the comedians are all American, and the references are, you know, primarily, well, there's relationships and marriage, and there's certain pop culture references. But because of the internet and cable TV, whoever right. comes to the show, even though it's primarily American tourists, followed by Canadian tourists who do get it. Yeah, any they also, they enjoy it. And it's pretty fun. Actually, I have to say, Canadians are fantastic audience members. They really are.
It's true. We are.
Great.
So that's an interesting question Marita asked. But, you know, between the locals and the tourists, but do you change your comedy act when you're in Aruba as opposed to when you're in New York?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are definitely certain bits that I do. If I'm talking about iguanas, that usually doesn't fly when I'm doing it back in New York. But, So I definitely have certain material that only works, you know, talking about guys right. who shouldn't be wearing Speedos. That could work in New York, but that's really pressing and in the moment in Aruba. Right. Everybody's like, yeah, I saw that earlier today also.
Yeah, right. I guess right. it all comes down to relatability. But one of the things we've learned in the last year, I think like Marina was saying, is or Radius, is how connected we all are. Like, this is affecting all of us globally.
Yeah.
Sally, what is your experience with relating to different people as they go through laughter therapy?
Well, and laughter therapy, I guess, is an aspect of what I do. So part of what I, you know, my approach and my private practice, the name of it is Holistic Health YYC, not with an H, so I've got a W in front of it, to emphasize this idea of the whole person, the whole being. And so when I approach clients, you know, some people, we're not going to start off with, okay, let's have some laughter therapy. You know, you're crying all day. You're not, you know, you're finding no sources of joy. Those are not going to be, you know, it's very much, you know, talking to people, meeting them where they're at, because as much as we hear the cliche term that, you know, we're all in this together, we're all experiencing it so different, including, you know, individuals in a single home. So in our house, there's five individuals. Everyone is experiencing it differently from, you know, the 1.5 year old who all she's known is pretty much quarantine and only seeing 4 other faces, to a 7 year old who's a highly competitive athlete and is used to competitions and like structure constantly. So, and for myself, where I'm used to traveling and, you know, doing public speaking events all the time, and now I'm on Zoom, and it's a challenge for me as well. So again, everyone in our house. So then I look at my clients, and when I'm supporting them, it's about meeting them where they're at. So with some clients, and I don't say this in a joking way, figuring out how to get brushing their teeth into their daily routine is where we're starting at, right? And figuring out how are we going to get those social supports. So with every client, no matter who, I just talk about the 3 pillars of wellness, and comedy and laughter fits in there where appropriate and in different levels for some people. But the pillars being fun and pleasure, accomplishment, and social connection. And these are pillars of well-being outside of COVID and being in a pandemic and a crisis situation. But, you know, when we're talking about being in quarantine, for example, which, you know, we're in pretty much lockdown right now in Alberta, Canada. For us, it means, you know, okay, so fun and pleasure. Okay, maybe that's, you know, watching Comedy Central, or, you know, marking out 30 minutes of routine a day to get some laughter in. Social connection, you know, if you can go for a walk, maybe it's going for a walk. If you're so lucky as to have restaurants and coffee shops open where you are, you know, going and doing that and going and actually sitting down distance from a friend or family member and having a cup of coffee. Maybe it's over Zoom, but figuring out where we can get that social connection in our lives. And then accomplishment. So this is something where for some people, this, you know, this is a, you know, something that is really the only thing they're contributing to. So when working at home, sometimes the drive is to just work all day at home because you got nothing else to do. Or maybe that accomplishment is we're let go from our job and we're not quite sure what accomplishment looks like. Maybe it's, you know, building a puzzle and seeing it through from start to finish, or reading 5 pages from a book every day. So again, everyone is so unique. And so it's so important to kind of meet them with where they're at, just like in a comedy routine, right? Some, you know, some of the lines are going to really, really like kill it for some people and some audiences, and others, they're just going to fall on deaf ears and you're going to hear.
Yeah, it really is. I must say the lockdown, since my husband died, my kids are all older and gone. The lockdown really does isolate people who live by themselves. I mean, I'm very active. I go walking, and I have my writing and my art, so I do that. But, you know, I usually play tennis 6 hours a week, and I usually write at the coffee shop, and that's my interaction. So to not have that is really difficult. To not have that physical connection with people is really difficult. My cat and my puppy really get way too many hugs. I'm sure they're like, no more. But I do help out some friends, which has been just a gift for me, actually, that they're both essential workers. One is a police officer, one is a nurse. And, you know, they don't have anyone that can come and look after their young kids who are home from school. So I go when they're both on shifts, I go and stay overnight there and be there and help out with the school and look after the kids. I've become like part of that family. And that's been a real gift for me. So the doing it together, it's true, but it is, we still are sitting here by ourselves, and Zoom is great. I mean, it's so nice to, you know, put on something different and a pair of earrings and like, wow, I'm going to see people today, you know, but,
from here up.
I still can't touch you, you know, I can't give you a hug. And right. Oh, that's a little tricky. And I must say, on the comedy note, I love to be able to laugh, but I'm finding that these days I'm more drawn to watching, you know, something like Born Identity, where there's lots of regression. Maybe that's the way I'm kind of getting it out myself, right? Yeah, a little laugh in there too.
It's funny you say that, because all the stuff I've been like, I rewatch Game of Thrones, I watch Peaky Blinders, I watch The Spy, yeah. I'm really like, what's the theme here? I'm like, oh yeah, everything is really aggressive and full
right.
of action. And
right. Or Merlin, like maybe we can find some magic to get us out of here. You know, that series has been great, but yeah.
Totally.
I found an interesting point that I find like a lot of my friends who are like more introverted have like really been enjoying the pandemic and not having a lot of the social, where my extroverted friends are like, I need human touch. I need human right. touch. I need to be, and I'm thriving here as an introvert. I'm loving it. I love people and all, but I just love, like, this isn't like a big deal to me that we have to connect over Zoom. Like, I love that in-person touch, but you know, I can manage for this short period of time.
It's interesting. Yeah, there's no fear of missing out anymore because there's nothing.
Right, exactly.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
What can you suggest another comedy show though? Because I'm really getting tired of how I met your mother and Friends, and you know, because like a good comedy show, not a stupid one. You know.
Well, did you watch Schitt's Creek, which is?
Oh, I love Schitt's Creek. That's
yeah.
my
yeah. Show. It's just not
I love it though.
Yeah.
It's that funny.
I enjoy it, and I believe it's done in Canada. It's a Canadian show.
Yep. Someone was telling me about Supermarket the other day. You heard about that one?
I haven't watched it. I've heard about it. I think that's on NBC. I haven't.
That's a Netflix thing, apparently. Anyway, I thought I'd try it, you know, get away from my violence.
There's lots of good.
Not being a violent person at all, right?
You know, there's some great stand-up specials on Netflix. You know,
there are.
Yeah, oh, that's true, are. Too. That's true, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lynn Coplett, very funny. A woman named Lynn Coplett. She has a terrific special out. So.
Okay, good. I'll check that one out. It's a good suggestion. Yeah. Thank you.
I watch all of the stand-up comedy. I think Netflix needs more stand-up comedy because I can binge watch stand-up comedy on Netflix for an entire weekend because it's like during the week, I have so much pressure. So on the weekend, I just want to relax. I just want to laugh, you know, and I want something that will change my mood. Oh, this has been an amazing show. I loved it. I love the connectivity, the laughter, the fun. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Radiance.
Yes. Well, thank you again for having me. This was awesome. If you are interested in learning more about my services or connecting with me, you can check out my website, radianceiplaw.com. You can follow me on Instagram at @RadianceHarrisESQ. Also feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in purchasing my book, Trademark Like a Boss, it's available. Cute. On Amazon and on my website, radianceiplaw.com. Thank
Got
you.
Pop that comment.
Yeah, because you're a boss.
I love it. You are so welcome, Sally. What do you have for us?
Okay, well, yes. So thank you everyone for joining this morning and taking the time. I'm not sure what the time is where everybody else is, but it was 8:45 when we started here. So I'm really appreciating a humorous start to the day and one of connectivity. So thank you all from the bottom of my heart. And I would really encourage the audience to reach out. Probably the easiest way would be just on Instagram. I'm at holistic with a W, so WH, so holistic health mama. And so that's on Instagram. And then you can also check out my book website. My book's also available on Amazon. So my book is Mindful Mamas and Papas. And then the website is just mindfulmamasandpapas.com. And you can get also the ebook version. And I have a lot of digital downloads as well on my website that people can make use of.
How do we know if we're a mindful mama or papa?
So, and mindfulness doesn't mean sitting down for 60 minutes and having a meditation. It's about trying to bring mindfulness and playfulness into our lives. And so if anyone's craving some playfulness or wanting to be in the present moment or, you know, just having a bit more joy in their life, which I think everyone is right now, then this book is for you. And every exercise is one page long in the book. It's fully illustrated. There's lots of things that you can color in it. There's coloring sheets. So it's really playful, and you can start anywhere in the book, unlike other, you know, parenting books that gather dust on the bedside table. It's not a textbook playbook.
It sounds fun. It sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you, Sally. Marina, what do you have for us?
Well, thank you, Radiance, for your thoughts on trademarking. Ray, when we get out of this, I'm coming to Aruba, Ray. absolutely. Thanks, Sally, for your mindful reminders. I'm interested in all of you. I'm interested in people. I'm a great observer. These are my two fiction books, Primrose Street, It's Lonely in Paradise. They are on my website at marinalreed.com. And this is what the cover of all of the Remember books looks like. They all have a window, an open window to hope. They are in the Remember It's Okay series. And the other three are coming out this May. I do have two other books that are kind of a secret, but they'll be coming out this spring and this fall as well. So yeah, stay tuned, check out my website, because there's a lot of interesting things on there that kind of helps us all to keep supporting ourselves and learning how to laugh and just kind of being happy with who we are. So yeah, thank you so much for this great, great morning.
You are so welcome. Now, the Roundtable Talk Show is currently booked out through April. So I would love to have you come back when, you know, go ahead and schedule it now, because by the time your books come out, we'll have room for you. Ray, great show, Ray.
This is so much fun. Thank you for having me, Sharifa. This is really great. And I really love meeting my fellow panelists and hearing what you're up to and hearing such great stories and information. So thank you to everybody. And this has been just such a treat. It's almost 1 o'clock here in Aruba. So good afternoon to some people and still good morning to others. If you want to learn more about having the best time possible on Zoom and having a comedy event for your employees or coworkers, please visit comedycloud.co. I promise you, everybody will have a sensational time. And you can also visit me on social media. It's Ray Comedy on Instagram and also raycomedy.com. And I hope to hear from everyone who is watching. So thank you.
Awesome.
Absolutely. So Comedy Cloud, is that like a YouTube type site where it's just strictly comedy, like just videos of comedy?
No, so Comedy Cloud is really the information site to find out how to do your own private event for whether you have a company or it could be a fundraising event. We've done a couple of 40th birthday parties for people. So Comedy Cloud just has information for all things online comedy for your friends and employees.
That's interesting. I might have to go there and check it out, because I haven't wanted to do a stand-up comedy show via Zoom. I just feel like I love the people, the reactions, you know, and not only the people, because everything is pretty much the same when you do Zoom. But for comedy, at least for me, it's the atmosphere of the club, you know, being at the club, going out to the club, date night, the drink, you know what I mean? You're in this environment. Yeah. And then when I'm sitting here in front of the laptop, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
If anybody does make it to Aruba, Aruba Ray's Comedy Club is one of the few places in the world where you can see live in-person comedy in a totally safe and distanced environment with outstanding comedians. And that would be arubacomedy.com, arubacomedy.com if you want to. And I hope that you come to Aruba. It's a beautiful place. Radiance, we need to meet up when you're here. You have to come to the show.
I will. Reach out, definitely. After all this clears up, we can try again. Yes.
We'll have to bring Radiance and Marina and Sally there when I'm appearing. I don't know when that's going to be. I'll wait for Radiance. We'll do it again. Now, I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you did not catch the live show does not mean you're not important. You are still important to me. I appreciate you. We appreciate the support. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Contact our guests, visit our guests, Heck, go to Aruba. Go check out a comedy show while you're there at where? Ray's, Aruba Ray's. I messed up the commercial. Aruba Ray's. Follow our guests on social media. Talk to them. Send them an email. Send them an inbox. When you reach out to them, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Take care.